Well, tonight we continue our series on church history. In the middle of this as well, we're looking at historical theology. We'll be interacting with various heresies that arose during church history. We're in this period here of persecution in the 200s AD, the 3rd century AD. Last time we met, we looked at African Christianity, the Christianity that existed in the 200s AD and the 3rd century AD on the northern coast of Africa, looking at in the northeast, the city of Alexandria in Egypt, and in the northwest, the city of Carthage, the south side of the Mediterranean, north side of Africa, and it was across the Mediterranean from the island of Sicily in Italy. So south of Italy is where the historic city of Carthage was. We looked primarily at two theologians that were in each city. We noted that in Alexandria, there was Clement of Alexandria and Origen, two leading theologians that were there in Alexandria in the northeast, in that historic city on the coast of the Mediterranean in present-day Egypt. And the Roman Empire controlled that whole area of the Mediterranean, and all the way up the western side of Europe, all the way to Britain. So the Roman Empire was huge. Remember, Alexandria, the city of Alexandria, was the intellectual capital, really, of the Roman Empire, even though the administrative capital, the political capital, was the city of Rome in Italy. The intellectual capital of the thinkers and philosophers really was down in Alexandria. And the two theologians, again, Clement of Alexandria and Origen. The two theologians over in Carthage, Tertullian and Cyprian. Tertullian and Cyprian. And you remember Cyprian was an older man when he became a Christian. He was a wealthy man, and he had been a lawyer and a professor of rhetoric when he came to faith in Christ. Let me say one thing that I didn't say last time on Tertullian. I mentioned Tertullian was one who was the most critical of philosophy. Remember as well, Tertullian was the one who went into Montanism. Montanism was the beginnings of Pentecostalism. So it's interesting to me, philosophy places great emphasis upon human reason and being rational. It fits because Tertullian then went into Pentecostalism, Montanism, which places great emphasis on spiritual experiences, more mystical experiences rather than rational. Or especially, though, with over in Alexandria, with Clement of Alexandrian origin, you have great respect for the philosophers, that they led the way to Christianity, in a sense, prepared the way to Christianity. As we saw with Justin Martyr, the leading apologist for Christianity in the 2nd century AD, as well had great respect for Socrates and certain Greek philosophers leading the way to Christ and Christianity. Okay. Tonight, we're beginning this section on from persecution to toleration. From persecution to toleration. You remember, from the early 100s AD, Emperor Trajan of the Roman Empire, Emperor Trajan, first one really leading broad persecutions of Christians across the empire. Okay? Kind of made it an official stance. If you don't worship Caesar as Lord, say Kaiser Kyrios, Caesar as Lord, and worship him, you'd be put to death, tortured or put to death. And that had been the official policy, basically, then for 200 years, from the early 100s to the early 300s. And that's where we'll be getting to, eventually, next time we meet, to Constantine, Emperor Constantine. Down here at the bottom of the board, Diocletian, who was emperor of Rome 284 to 305 AD, he was a great reformer in the Roman Empire, okay? And he introduced complex reforms into the Roman Empire. But after him was one emperor, Constantine, in 306. And we will see through his conversion to Christianity, through Constantine's conversion to Christianity, he brought freedom to Christians across the empire. So that's a very unique history we'll be getting into with Constantine. And this is the point here, from persecution to toleration, and this is where we're moving through this period in the 3rd century, in the 200s AD, and moving to the end of that century to Diocletian. Okay? To Diocletian. And this is this history, kind of in broad terms. And then on the back side of the board, we're going to look at an interesting development at the end of this century in Armenia, a country, a kingdom to the east of the Roman Empire, east of Asia Minor, the eastern side of the Roman Empire at that time, which is present-day Turkey. There's this little country north of present-day Iran, ancient Persia, that called the Kingdom of Armenia. And very interesting what Christianity, through Gregory the Illuminator, and how Christianity became the religion of that kingdom. And then we're going to look at some different beliefs that arose during this period. So this is where we're going to look at this history here through the 200s up to Diocletian, and then look at, on a side note, what happened in Armenia, the Kingdom of Armenia, on the back of the board. And then we're going to, as well, look at it in this period. There were kind of three different beliefs that arose in the Roman Empire, okay, of sun worship, of Neoplatonism, and Manichaeism, okay? So that's more topical, in a sense, on the back of the board. This is more historical here of what happened in the 200s AD, 3rd century. And again, we're using Nick Needham's. He's got a 5-volume set on church history, and I'm doing the labor for you to read through that and summarize for you. So we're working through, you're getting through the first volume at the moment. But his volumes are the 2,000 Years of Christ's Power. 2,000 Years of Christ's Power. But Nick Needham is a Doctrines of Grace Baptist Reformed theologian who his specialty is church history. So here's what he's got here. Is from persecution to toleration in the 3rd century, in the 200s. And number one in the outline then here is persecutions under emperors Decius and Valerian. Persecutions under emperors Decius and Valerian. Overall, the first half of the 3rd century AD was peaceful and the church grew. In general terms, overall, with a broad brush, you could say the first half of the 3rd century AD was peaceful for the Christian church in the Roman Empire. In that period of time, many rich families became Christians and many buildings were set aside specifically for Christian worship at that time. And interestingly, in the city of Rome, the first Christian cemetery was built in the city of Rome in the early 200s AD, early 3rd century AD. In that period, many rich families became Christians. Many buildings were set aside as meeting houses, like we have here, specifically for Christian worship. And as well, in the city of Rome, the first Christian cemetery was built, early 200s AD. Emperor Alexander Severus, he was emperor 222 AD to 235 AD, and he had some Christian inclinations, some Christian leanings. He employed the great Christian scholar Julius Africanus. And he employed Julius Africanus to organize the city of Rome's public library. This Julius Africanus was quite a scholar. He had written one book on world history up to that point. He had written a 24-volume encyclopedia on a whole range of different topics. He was a scholar as well on original languages of the Bible. He, at one time, wrote a letter to Origen about one issue of whether something in the Greek Septuagint should be in the Greek Septuagint or not, the Greek translation of the Old Testament Hebrew. He was a scholar, a Christian scholar, very intellectual person, Julius Africanus. And he was employed by the emperor Alexander Severus, who was emperor from 222 AD to 235 AD, to say this pagan emperor actually hired a Christian who was a great intellectual to organize the public library of the city of Rome. That's a pretty big deal. Also, in the early 200s, Philip the Arab, he was emperor of Rome from 244 to 249 AD. He's called Philip the Arab because he was born in Syria. So north of Palestine, Roman Empire controlled that area. His ancestors, he had descendants that were of Arabian descent. So he was born, though, in the Roman Empire in Syria, north of Palestine, because Roman Empire controlled all of that, from Asia Minor through Syria, down through Palestine, down through Egypt, etc., all across the Mediterranean. But this emperor, Philip the Arab, who was emperor from 244 to 249 AD, he also had Christian inclinations. And what I mean by that is he had statues to Jesus and Abraham. He had symbols and icons to Jesus and Abraham within his religious area that he would worship with pagan idols. Okay? With pagan idols. That's why I put syncretism here on the board. Syncretism is the sin of joining Christian worship with idolatry. Okay? So that's really what both of these emperors, even though they had Christian inclinations, where Alexander Severus hired this Christian scholar, Julius Africanus, to organize the public library of the city of Rome, he, in a sense, he was still worshiping pagan gods, but so showed some interest in Christianity. That's the syncretism, bringing two things and syncing them together. It was the sin of ancient Israel. Right, it was the sin, R.C. Sproul said, of ancient Israel, where they would bring in the pagan gods and bring it into the temple of Israel and then worship Yahweh and all of their pagan gods. That syncretism. Well, this was the same with the Emperor Philip the Arab. Is he kind of combined some Christian emblems of worship with his pagan idols. Now, Philip the Arab's ablest general, military general, was Decius. And Decius overthrew Philip the Arab. It was a military coup. And Decius was emperor for 2 years over the Roman Empire. In 250 AD, Decius organized the first universal persecution of Christians across the entire empire. You say, well, what was it that really concerned Decius? Decius considered Christians an absolute danger and threat to the unity of the empire. Well, Christians had made themselves unpopular 3 years earlier, in 247 AD, by refusing to join in the pagan festivities celebrating the 1,000th anniversary of the founding of Rome. Now think about that a minute. We're going to be celebrating the 250th anniversary of the founding of America in 1776. And next year in 2026, 250th anniversary of the founding of America. They were celebrating in 247 AD the 1,000th year anniversary of the founding of Rome, that 1,000 years prior. If you add 247 to 753, you get 1,000, right? B.C. counts down to Christ, to the birth of Christ, and then zero, and then we start counting away from Christ after his birth. We're counting away from Christ, adding years now. There, they were counting down as they were getting closer to Christ, is the way we wrote up the calendar. So in 753 B.C., the tradition, the legend, according to Roman tradition, is that's when Rome was founded. Romulus and Remus, and they have a legend that's mythical, that they were raised by a she-wolf, and there's quite a mythical story they have. But that's, according to their legend, Rome, the city of Rome was founded in 753 BC. So, counting all the way down to Christ is 753 years to the birth of Christ, and then we start adding then, right, counting away from the birth of Christ. So in 247 AD, they have this huge festival for the 1,000th anniversary of the founding of Rome, but they're pagan, right? So you have sacrifices to the pagan gods, worship of the pagan gods, and Christians refuse to be a part of that. Interestingly, in 248 AD, right after that 1,000th anniversary of the founding of Rome, in 248 AD, there were a series of invasions by Germanic tribes into the empire. And across Europe, the Germanic tribes are typically called Goths. Goths. So they were given different names like Franks, Vandals, Goths. But these up where Germany is today, in a sense. So think of it this way. From Britain south through the western side of Europe is where the Roman Empire was. So basically where Germany is, you had the Germanic tribes, the Goths. And in 248 AD, these ethnic tribes, native tribes, started militarily invading the Roman Empire. And they invaded all over. They invaded into Italy, into Spain. At one invasion, they went down through Spain across the Mediterranean down to Carthage in North Africa. In another invasion, they went way to the east toward the Balkans. It's northeast of Greece. So they were really making different military invasions into the Roman Empire. Remember, Decius here, he's a military general. A military general. So what he saw in 247, he's a military general. Philip the Arab is the emperor till 249. But in 247, he sees Christians not being a part of the pagan festivities. So Christians seem like they're not loyal citizens of the Roman Empire. And the next year in 248, he sees a series of Germanic tribes militarily invading at different times, attacking the Roman Empire. So he's thinking, this is not looking good. Christians are all over the empire, and they didn't take part in the festivities of the 1,000th anniversary celebration of the founding of Rome. So they seem to them disloyal to Decius, and then these Goths are attacking. Decius argued that the pagan gods were angry because the Christian church was drawing away so many people from worshiping them. In Christianity, we don't just look at someone and say, well, you're a Buddhist, that's fine, I'm a Christian. You be a Buddhist, I'll be a Christian. Or you're a Hindu, you be a Hindu, that's fine, and I'll be a Christian. We don't do that. What do we say? There's one way to heaven, one and only one. There's salvation in no other name given among men, Acts 4:12. John 14:6, Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. No other way to the Father. Buddhism won't do it. Hinduism won't do it. The pagan gods and goddesses won't do it of ancient Greece and Rome. If you're going to be saved from the judgment to come, it's only by faith in Christ. You've got to be converted. Leave your paganism and come to Christianity. And what Decius then, this military general that had a military coup and took over as emperor, he argued that the pagan gods were angry because Christians drew people away from worshiping them. And here he's got, they're angry, and now we've got the Goths waging different military invasions against us. So Decius executed the bishops of Rome, Antioch, and Jerusalem in various main cities across the Roman Empire. There were bishops, there were leading pastors, leading overseers. And he had the bishops of the city of Rome, city of Antioch, and the city of Jerusalem executed. In that persecution, he persecuted Origen from Alexandria, who ended up in Caesarea as a bishop in Palestine, near Jerusalem. Well, Origen was one who suffered such torture and in that persecution that he died a few years later from his injuries in 254. We mentioned that briefly last time we met. So he tortured many people in addition to actually executing bishops. Some of the bishops he tortured brutally. And Origen died just a few years later from all the injuries of his being tortured. Decius ordered all inhabitants of the Roman Empire to offer sacrifices to the pagan gods. And he said that they had to obtain an official certificate proving they did it. Right? Governments love requiring certificates. Right? Prove to me that something actually did happen, and there's paperwork for everything. Well, many Christians, we talked a little bit about this last time we met, but many Christians obeyed his order and sacrificed to the pagan gods to avoid persecution. Remember that we called it, they lapsed. They lapsed was the term given. They apostatized. They rejected the Christian faith to avoid persecution, torture, or death. They said, okay, I'll do it. Some of them said, well, I won't do it, but I'll pay for a fake certificate to avoid the persecution of death. So then you ended up, remember, with the lapsus controversy. What should we do with these people? When the persecution ended, and then these Christians want to get back into the church, how do you handle them? How much discipline, how much penance do you require to prove their repentance is true? We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But Decius died fighting. So he's the only emperor for 2 years. He got there by military coup of Philip the Arab. He's only there for 2 years. He's a military emperor. He's fighting the Goths, and he dies fighting the Goths in 251 AD. So he was only emperor. He was an emperor general, in a sense, for 2 years. Well, there was a little bit of a lull, and then Emperor Valerian took over, and he was emperor from 253 AD to 260 AD. And Valerian renewed the persecution of Decius. In 257 AD, Valerian, as emperor, tried to kill all the church's bishops and presbyters, all the elders, not just the leading pastors, the bishops, but all of the elders as well. Anyone in church leadership across the empire within Christianity tried to kill. His most famous victim was Cyprian of Carthage that we covered, who died a martyr for his Christian faith in 258 AD. Cyprian of Carthage, the one who had been a lawyer and professor of rhetoric before he was converted to Christ, and he gave away all his wealth when he became a Christian. So we've had this persecution under Decius for 2 years, and then a little bit of a lull, and then Valerian, as emperor, intensified the persecution. Well, then Valerian's son, Gallienus, became the new Roman emperor. And he was emperor from 260 to 268 AD. Gallienus abandoned his father's Valerian's policy of persecution. He was a disciple. Gallienus was a disciple of the pagan philosopher Plotinus. We're going to be talking about that in a minute. He embraced Neoplatonism. Okay? But Gallienus believed the only effectual weapon against the church was education. He doesn't believe that physical persecution would destroy the Christian church. People die for their faith. We believe in a bodily resurrection from the dead. Christians, in the end, are not scared of death. You cannot exterminate the church through physical persecution and killing. You're sending me to a better place, to live as Christ, to die as gain. Right? His argument was that the only effective weapon against the church was education. Now, what's fascinating to me in America is we had the neo-pagans, the new. Neo is a Greek word for new. We have neo-pagans that took over our culture in the 1960s, Cultural Revolution. And what did they do? They took over government education. They themselves agreed with Gallienus. Said the way you take over a Christian society is through false teaching. You get them to think false things. You want to try and just kill Christians who know who Jesus Christ is, and you won't win. Because when we know who Jesus Christ is, I know I'm going to a better place. To torture me or kill me will not stop me. But if you can get someone to believe something false through education, you've got them. And that's why the warning in the Bible is always against false teachers. Great battle, really, in our time right now is controlling the curriculum, what's being taught to our children. Well, Gallienus didn't last long. He was assassinated in 268 AD with his whole family. His opponents killed him and his whole family. Interestingly, for the next 44 years, the empire left Christians in peace. After the assassination of Gallienus in 268 AD, for the next 44 years, the empire left Christians in peace. Now, it's primarily, we'll just note here, it's primarily because they're dealing with other military problems. Okay, with the Germanic tribes attacking them, and there's also, we'll see, military attacks from the east. So the empire's tottering. They've got bigger problems than Christians. They got foreign enemies invading, and the empire was tottering. And that's why they focused their attention not on inside on Christians, but outside trying to deal with foreign enemies. Okay, that's why it ended up in peace for 44 years then, after Gallienus was assassinated. But it's important to point out that the result of these persecutions under Decius and Valerian is we ended up with the lapsus controversy that we talked about last time. How hard do you discipline them? And remember, the great disagreement was between Cyprian of Carthage, the bishop of Carthage, Cyprian, and Stephen of Rome, the bishop of Rome, where the bishop of Rome wanted more lenient discipline, dealing with the lapsus Christians, the lapsed Christians, and Cyprian wanted to be more harsh. Stephen, the bishop of Rome, wanted to excommunicate everybody who followed Cyprian. And Cyprian was like, no, the Lord Jesus Christ is Lord over all. Let's just wait till he returns. He'll settle it, okay? But it created lasting divisions in the church. That was the result of that. It's the disagreement in the church for dealing with lapsed Christians created lasting divisions in the church. That was one of the results from that persecution under Decius and Valerian. Okay, so that's number one in the outline, persecutions under emperors Decius and Valerian. Number two is the empire at the end of the 3rd century AD. Second in the outline here is the empire at the end of the 3rd century AD. And as I said, the lack of persecution at the end of the 3rd century, the end of the 200s AD, was largely from a tottering military situation. Teeter-totter? It's tottering. You don't know, is it going to succeed or is it going to fail? Is the empire going to fall, or is it going to keep going? Well, militarily, it was questionable at that point. The Germanic tribes from the north kept invading, and then in the east, this Persian Empire, the Sassanid Persian Empire in the east, around present-day Iran, in that area, Persia, they invaded from the east. So the Roman Empire, remember, was all of from Britain all the way on Western Europe, down through all around the edge of the Mediterranean. So it included Palestine and all of that, and present-day Turkey and Asia Minor, it's called. But from the east of there was this Persian Empire attacking. And they attacked several times, at least three different times. You have multiple attacks from the Germanic tribes, sometimes even going as far all the way through Spain on the west, all the way across the Mediterranean to Carthage, and then down through the Balkans. So you got all of this military invasion taking place from the outside on enemies so that they were having to deal with. So then they stopped persecuting Christians on the inside and said, we've got to deal with this. If we don't deal with these foreign enemies, we're going to fall. Well, for a time, it seemed the Roman Empire would collapse. But it fought back under two brilliant soldier emperors, one named Claudius Gothicus. Gothicus was emperor 268 to 270 AD, and the other, Aurelian. Aurelian, who was emperor 270 to 275 AD. Under those two brilliant soldier emperors, Claudius Gothicus and Aurelian, they were able to bring stability again to the Roman Empire in dealing with these foreign enemies. And that situation really became stable by the time of Diocletian as emperor, who was emperor from 284 to 305 AD. Okay, now that's right before Constantine. Constantine is the one that's going to be converted to Christianity as an emperor. Okay? Constantine will become emperor in 306, tolerant of Christians, but not yet a Christian. Okay, his conversion will take place in 312 AD, the Battle of Milvian Bridge, just outside of the city of Rome. We'll be getting into that next time we meet, Lord willing. Real fascinating history, how God brought Christianity to the Roman Empire through the conversion of a leader. Okay, so that's kind of this history then within the 200s of the Roman Empire relating with Christians and how they went from persecution to toleration. Because then we will end up with, after Diocletian, we'll end up with toleration of Christians. Now, he was a mixed bag, as we'll get to. Okay, he started out tolerating and then persecuting Christians. But Constantine, after him, was one in 306 that tolerated Christians under his realm of authority. Okay. So in this period of time, something very unique and historic is happening to the east of the Roman Empire. So the Roman Empire went all the way east of Greece into Asia Minor at that time, which was called present-day Turkey. Okay, east of there is a kingdom, Armenia, kingdom of Armenia. So bordering the Roman Empire in the eastern province, the Roman Empire divided up like we do. We have the United States, right? Our nation is divided up into states. The Roman Empire was divided up into provinces. Kind of like Canada is divided up into provinces. Well, in the eastern province of Cappadocia in Asia Minor, present-day Turkey, on the eastern side of that, it bordered the kingdom of Armenia. Armenia. Now, this just a side note. This is where we say, when we speak of Calvinism versus Arminianism, right? Calvinism versus Arminianism at the beginning of the 1600s A.D., that's followers of Jacob Arminius. So the pronunciation is that person is Arminius, Jacob Arminius, and his followers are called Arminians. But we're not to pronounce them Armenians. Every now and then we accidentally do that. But these are actually, Armenians are actually of a country, and that country is still there, country of Armenia, north of present-day Iran. Okay? really interesting. In 300 AD, Christianity became Armenia's official national religion. In 300 AD, for this kingdom of Armenia, just east of Asia Minor, the eastern edge of the border of the Roman Empire, which they called a province of Cappadocia, east of there was a kingdom of Armenia. And in that kingdom, in 300 AD, Christianity became Armenia's official national religion through the evangelism of Gregory the Illuminator. Gregory the Illuminator. Now, he was born roughly 240 AD, died 332 AD. This evangelist for Christianity is called the Illuminator because he is one who brought the light of Christ to Armenia, who was in the dark. He's one that we think was originally from Armenia, born there. He was an Armenian. He may have been a son of royalty. And then he had moved into this area of Cappadocia in Asia Minor in the Roman Empire, became a Christian, and then went and evangelized his homeland, Armenia. And he, by the grace of God, converted the king and all his family in Armenia to Christianity. So Armenia, this kingdom, became the first nation in history to accept Christianity as its established religion. And Gregory, the Illuminator, the evangelist, became the archbishop of the church in that country, the leading bishop and leader of the Christian church in Armenia. Isn't that something? So you say, well, which country in the world is it that first established Christianity as its national religion? Established meaning it's going to be protected by the physical sword of the ruler, and it's going to be supported through tax money. It's established. Say, which nation was it that first did that? This kingdom of Armenia through the evangelist Gregory the Illuminator. And he first converted, by the grace of God, the king of Armenia and then his whole family. Very prolific evangelist and effective by the grace of God. Now, in this period of time, in the late 3rd century, in the 200s AD, there's three new religious movements that arose in this period. Three new religious movements. Sun worship, S-U-N, of the sun that rises every day. We have the moon and the sun, right? So sun worship, which, you know, again, in the history of the world, there's been other entities that had sun worship, okay? But really, it was something new in this period of time for the Roman Empire. Okay, Neoplatonism is the second one. Neoplatonism. And neo is the Greek word for new. Neo is new. A new form of Plato's philosophy. Plato died 347 BC. Okay? And then the third is Manichaeism. This is pronounced Manichaeism. Manichaeism. So sun worship, Neoplatonism, and Manichaeism arose in this period of time. There was a vigorous revival of philosophy that arose in that period of time in the 3rd, 4th century, which is why Neoplatonism arose in that period of time. And as we shall see, Manichaeism is just a variation of Gnosticism, ancient Gnosticism. Let's deal with sun worship here. Sun worship. Pagan religious thinkers began to reorganize the traditional worship of the gods and goddesses. They had all their mythical gods and goddesses, and they began to reorganize their traditional worship around a new cult of sun worship. Of sun worship. The old Greco-Roman paganism of personal gods and goddesses was moving towards a belief in one God. So in their Greco-Roman mythology, there was all these different personal gods and goddesses that married and had children, were very personal and limited, and over various spheres of life. Well, here the old Greco-Roman paganism of personal gods and goddesses was moving towards a belief in one God, but it was the sun that rose and set each day. Emperor Aurelian, he was one of those genius military emperors that dealt with the external threats. Emperor Aurelian was emperor from 270 to 275 AD. Emperor Aurelian tried to make it fashionable to worship the sun by building a temple in the city of Rome to the unconquered sun. It was called the Temple to the Unconquered Sun. He built that temple in the city of Rome in 274 AD. A real big, glorious temple to the unconquered sun. Interestingly, people begin celebrating December 25th as the sun's birthday. If you know anything about winter solstice, when we have the shortest amount of daylight and the longest night, it occurs roughly around December 21st, right in there. But you're right there, where all of a sudden, December 25th, the amount of daylight hours gets longer and longer and longer. Right? You're at winter solstice. And then 6 months from there, you'll be in summer solstice. Right? Where we're in the middle of summer, we have, here in Minnesota, we have almost, you know, daylight hours from real early in the day, 5 a.m. all the way to like 9 p.m., right? Well, it's the other way around in the middle of winter. And that's where, once the days start to get longer, it was their celebration almost of the birth of the sun, around December 25th. But from that celebration, we derived the festival of Christmas, celebrating the birth of Christ, December 25th. Interestingly, Nick Needham says Christian conversions, in a sense, were made more easier because they were moving then from the mythical gods and goddesses to more of a belief in one God, even though it was an idol, but as if there's only one, and that's the sun. So he said, in some sense, it made Christian conversions more easier because, this is his words, they were worshiping God through the sun, S-U-N, that rises and sets each day, to worshiping God through the Son, capital S-O-N, Jesus Christ, the Son of God. So from worshiping God through the Son, S-U-N, to worshiping God through the Son, S-O-N. So the transition in your mind is a little easier. From all sorts of many gods and goddesses to then through this sun worship being popular to having only one idol, the sun, that rises and sets, to then worshiping that sun, to then worshiping the true sun, the Son of God, Jesus Christ. It's interesting. Okay, so that was one new religious movement in this period, was sun worship among the Roman Empire. The second one is Neoplatonism. It's called Neoplatonism. As I said, a vigorous revival of philosophy arose in the 3rd and 4th centuries. So in the 200s into the 300s AD, people were very interested again in thinking philosophically and rationally. Plotinus is the one behind this Neoplatonism. He was born around 205 AD and died 270 AD. And Plotinus was an Egyptian who taught in the city of Rome. Nick Needham states that Plotinus was one of the most influential philosophers humanity has ever known, unquote. Say it again. Needham says Plotinus was, quote, one of the most influential philosophers humanity has ever known, unquote. Plotinus turned the philosophy of Plato into a spiritual faith. Now, I just covered in my American Western Civ class the philosophies of Socrates and Plato in that last class I had. So you can go online and listen to my summary of the philosophy of Plato. What Plotinus did is turn that philosophy of Plato into a spiritual faith. Again, Neoplatonism is from the Greek neo, meaning new, a new form of Platonism, a new form of the philosophy of Plato. What was it? What did it say? Neoplatonism says that the source of all things is the One. That's what Plotinus called it, the One. Capital O-N-E, the One. And sometimes he called it God. Sometimes he called it the Good, with a capital G, the Good, the One. Neoplatonism, that's the source of all things. The One, sometimes called God, or the Good. Plotinus said that the One is so transcendent, so other, that nothing could really be said about it. You can't know it. It's almost, he takes a form of agnosticism at that point to say, God is so transcendent, or the Good, or the One, that's the source of all things, is so other, so transcendent, so infinite, that you can't know it at all. You can't say anything about it. He believed in emanation, he called it, emanation, that everything emanated or flowed from the One, as light flows from the sun each day. As light flows from the sun each day. And he had a theory then that as light is further from its source, it becomes dimmer. So everything from the One, the further it is from the One, is less real. The further it is, anything is, from the source, the One, the less real it is. As light becomes dimmer, the further away it is from the source of the light. So his theory, again, is from the One, he calls either the God or the Good, from the One, all things flow or emanate, and the further one is away flowing from the One, the less real it is. Now, if you remember, let me just say one thing on Plato, okay? He was a Greek philosopher in Athens. He died 347 BC. He was trying to say, how is it that we have a universe where there's unity and diversity? We know in our minds there's such things as a horse, dog, cat, human. There's categories that do not change. So I don't care, there's different sized cats, but you know that's a cat, not a dog. Why is that? You know something's a chair and not a table. Why? Right? There's these fixed categories. And yet we see everything change as well in reality. Well, Plato said, how you harmonize those two things, as if everything's changed or if everything's fixed with categories, how do you harmonize that? He said two worlds, a spiritual world and a physical world. A metaphysical spiritual world of real things, perfect ideas and forms, perfect chairness, perfect catness, perfect human beingness in the metaphysical spiritual realm, and yet we have imperfect copies in the physical realm of our senses that we see that are always changing. Imperfect copies. And what Plato said is that the spiritual metaphysical realm of perfect ideas and forms is real, and not just real, but more real. So he put forth the idea of some parts of reality being more real than other parts. Well, this is where Plotinus is playing on that then, forming this spiritual religion of this new Platonism, and saying ultimately everything flows from the One, but the further you get away from the One, you're dimmer, or in a sense less real, more incomplete. So in his mind, Plotinus's mind, there are different levels of reality, and each are less real or more real, depending on what level of reality, how close you are to the one. In his mind, it all begins in the one, emanates from there what he called the mind. Mind. And from there he called soul. And from there, nature. And from there, matter. Physical matter is at the very end the least real. Physical matter that you see with your senses and feel with your senses, etc. The closer things are to the one, the more real it is. The further away, the dimmer or less real. The mind was sometimes called, in this Neoplatonism, was sometimes called Son of God. So from the one, which is so transcendent you can't say anything about it in his mind, but from the one comes mind. And sometimes they would refer to mind as Son of God, who created the universe. So in his theory, his beliefs, mind is what created all things, not the one. But mind did. And sometimes they referred to mind as Son of God. The soul, Plotinus said, was referring to either human souls as well as referring to a greater world soul. For Plotinus, the human soul had incompleteness. So we're down at this level, and we're incomplete. We're less real than we should be. We're incomplete because we're further away from the one. How do you get, then, complete? In his mind, spiritual discipline involved living for spiritual and not earthly things. Your goal is then, in his mind, is to be united with the One, spiritually. He claimed, Plotinus did, that he experienced that a couple of times in his life. He said it was a glorious experience. But what it included then was avoiding earthly things, how you and I move up the chain of reality. Because we're incomplete, to become complete, united with the One spiritually, we have to avoid earthly things. He even said avoid work, but avoid excess food and drink, sex, all of that. Avoid earthly things, which is asceticism. Usually in false religions, you end up with asceticism. As they have the appearance of spirituality because they're avoiding all these earthly things. And as well, to move up, than to have union with the One. That union here, it's mystical. It's hard to express. It's very mystical and mysterious. So mysticism, kind of a special knowledge experience, and then as well as asceticism was a part of his Neoplatonism. It's not Christianity. It's paganism, right? In lots of different ways. Yeah, think of that, though. This Plotinus who came up with this, Nick Needham, church historian, says this Plotinus was one of the most influential philosophers humanity has ever known. There's parts of this that are in the 1960s Cultural Revolution, okay, of the intellectuals that took over things in the 1960s Cultural Revolution. Carl Jung, his psychology but he was a specialist in ancient occultism, Gnosticism, and Neoplatonism, and all of those things. The third one, so sun worship, Neoplatonism, and Manichaeism. What also arose during this period of time is Manichaeism. Manichaeism. Mani is his name. This is invented by a Persian named Mani. That's why it's Manichaeism. Mani lived 216 AD to 277 AD. Manichaeism was a new form of Gnosticism. Remember, one of the essence, one of the core beliefs of Gnosticism was that physical things are bad. Physical things are evil. And you kind of have that here within Plotinus, following Plato, is that what's less real are physical things. And what's real is spiritual. You know, within Gnosticism, you have this full embrace that physical things are bad and evil. So asceticism is a part of it as well. We believe in Christianity, everything physical created by God was very good, Genesis 1:31. Right? Food is good, we thank God for it. Right? Okay, it's good. Houses are good. We thank God for chairs, physical things, cars. God is good to us, spiritually and physically. But with Manichaeism, it's a new form of Gnosticism invented by this Persian named Mani. It taught dualism. Dualism. If you were here Sunday evening, this last Sunday evening, Pastor Ron talked about that when he talked about Satan. Satan is very powerful. He was the lead angel in heaven before he fell because of sinful pride. In fact, he's the most powerful angel, but a fallen angel. But is he as powerful as God, the creator of all things? No. Dualism says that there's these eternally equal forces of light and darkness, of good and evil. Manichaeism taught that in this dualism, all things could be explained as a conflict between these two eternally equal forces of light and darkness, of good and evil. And in Manichaeism, human beings are a mixture of these two forces and must be devoted to purifying all darkness. Power of a lie is its closeness to the truth. Is there darkness within us? Yes. Is there sin within us? Yes. But we come into the world not partially light. We come into the world totally depraved in Adam. Only darkness. And then once we're saved, we have sin that remains. So in a sense, we have this struggle between good and evil within us. Once we're converted to Christ, Christ reigns in our hearts, but sin remains, and that's the conflict. Human beings come into this world totally depraved, but with a conscience. A law is written on their heart, Romans 2:15, telling them what's good or evil. That's Romans 2:15. So, in Manichaeism, you've got to try and purify that darkness. So it's an eternal battle between equal forces of light and darkness, and they're in human beings, is what Manichaeism taught, this equal fight and conflict. You've got to purify out the darkness. And you're helped by agents of light, is what he said. So there's eternal equal forces of light and darkness fighting each other in conflict, but there's agents of light that will help you. For Mani, this Persian, lived 216 to 277 AD, he considered Buddha, the founder of Buddhism, which Buddhism was founded by Buddha in 5th century BC in India. Buddha eventually then left India, and India became Hindu, okay? But Buddhism took over all sorts of other areas of Asia. But actually, he's from India, which is fascinating. But if you know anything about Buddhism and Buddha, it's not really a religion technically, because they don't pray, they don't technically believe in God, but they believe in some forms of dualism in a metaphysical realm, that salvation comes through leaving yourself. There's almost like this battle between yourself and the external being and non-being, between self and non-self. And then they try and meditate upon what's the sound of one hand clapping to try and leave self, to leave pain and suffering. I mean, it's irrational, it's nonsensical, but through his teachings, it's moralism is what it is. It's not really a religion, but moralism. And they're trying to achieve nirvana through irrational thinking. Okay. I'm trying to avoid categorical thinking. But he said, in his mind, Mani said, oh, Buddha's an angel of light. And this Zoroaster, the founder of Zoroastrian faith, Zoroastrianism in Islam, that was around Persia in the 6th century BC. I found different dates on that, but it was roughly around the 6th century BC. And kind of had the same thing of dualism within there. So that's why he's kind of looking for different ones that had different forms of dualism. And he also included Jesus as a nice prophet teacher who used terms like the kingdom of darkness and the kingdom of light. So then he tries to just bring that out into his own way of thinking, okay, in Manichaeism. But just Jesus is just a prophet like Buddha in his mind. And then Mani himself, he includes himself on the level of Buddha and Jesus and this other Persian fellow, Zoroaster. Mani's kind of a proud fellow here. Now, Mani saw him physical matter as evil. That's this, it's a new form of Gnosticism. Saw physical matter as evil. He rejected the Old Testament scriptures, which Marcion was one of the lead Gnostic teachers. We covered him. Marcion rejected the Old Testament scriptures as well. And then he claimed all his teachings could be established by rational proof. So he's one who had a higher view of human reason. Again, there was a revival of philosophy in the 3rd and 4th centuries. That's thinking reasonably, rationally. So he's claiming his beliefs are reasonable and rational. He claimed all his beliefs could be established by reason. That's boasting in the pride of human reason and what it's capable of knowing. Manichaeism, you say, how popular was it? It spread throughout the Empire of Rome and beyond, and eventually survived and went on all the way into the 16th century in China before dying out. So it was a false way of thinking that really went quite a long time in the history of the world. But this is what Christians were dealing with at that time. Okay? You say in your mind, what were they dealing with? They were running elbows with people at the local Walmart in the city of Rome or elsewhere in Carthage and different marketplaces in Athens, etc. And say, you run into a Neoplatonist, or you run into a Manichaean, or you run into a sun worshiper. And you get to share the gospel of Christ with them. Like Gregory the Illuminator, who brought Christianity to the kingdom of Armenia, to the king and his whole family, and Armenia became the first nation to accept Christianity as this established religion. Amazing. But this is where a lot of these things get repackaged, these false beliefs. Okay, you'll find beliefs similar to these in our day and age. The 1960s Cultural Revolution brought up a lot of this as well. Some of the 1960s radicals would go travel to a Buddhist temple. So then they're kind of along the lines of Manichaeism, and then they were looking for teachers of light, in a sense. Okay, so lots of false ways of thinking. But this is where we are in America. It's similar to the Roman Empire that the early Christians were dealing with. But what's fascinating to me, what's really fascinating to me, is they were celebrating the 1000th anniversary in 247 AD. They were celebrating the 1000th anniversary of the founding of Rome. Had a pagan founding in 753 BC, pagan gods and goddesses. Next year, July 4th, 2026, will be the 250th anniversary of America. We had a Christian founding. Who are the ones that don't want to celebrate with us are the pagans of our day. They're the ones who hate America and do not want to celebrate it with us because they're not Christians. They want to say, America is nothing but an oppressive regime. America was founded by bigots. America was founded in their mind by slavery. America in their mind does not stand for freedom. America in their mind is terrible. That's the 1960s Cultural Revolutionaries. The tables are turned. You and me that want to celebrate America's founding, we're Christians because it had a Christian founding. Who do I think's disloyal to America is the pagans of our day. See how the tables have flipped? In Rome, it was in reverse. You see that? You think? You understand? They had a pagan founding. Christians would not celebrate the 1,000-year anniversary because they said paganism is false. In America, we had a Christian founding. Who does not want to celebrate the founding of America in our day? The pagans. It's just reverse. You see that? You get me? Yeah. This is where we're able to utilize the history of America and something to celebrate and say, they were not perfect, but boy, were they wise in how they established our republic on biblical Christian principles that really stand for liberty. Okay. So, Lord willing, the next time we meet, we'll look at the third point in the outline, the final struggle from Diocletian to Constantine. From Diocletian to Constantine. So we'll pick up with the Emperor Diocletian and then move there to Constantine. And that unique history there, wonderful history, God's smiling providence.